All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, April 13th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is 39 degrees and sunny here in upstate New York. So not as warm as I'd like it to be, but definitely not snowing, so I can't complain. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Reprogramming Life. Anything goes DNA and DIY global destruction. Woo! We've been digging into over the last few days. We looked at some of this CRISPR technology and this company named, non-for-profit company named AdGene, who seems to be helping us right along with their interns to the coming biological apocalypse by sending out this CRISPR gene editing tool to anyone and everyone who requests it. They tape it to a postcard and they ship it out anywhere in the world. And there are no stops on any of this technology right now. You know, what kills me is that they are dubbing it the largest invention of the 21st century that's going to change the way everything is done. It's going to change the entire genetic makeup of the world around us because of the promise of this CRISPR, right? We talked about this many, many times, how it can take a bacteria and it goes in and it finds the gene sequence, it matches the sequence that you want to remove, and then it allows you to go and snip that sequence, remove that sequence, replace that sequence and zip it right back into place for a lot of different things. And right now they're just messing around with E. coli bacteria. You know, everyone's like, ah, E. coli makes you get a little sick, but that's about it. But E. coli bacteria really seems to be the engine that they're utilizing now behind a lot of this really high-end technology. And then we discovered to boot that even if there aren't a lot of smart cookies out there who know how to use this CRISPR technology, so the 60,000 or so far that AdGene has sent postcards out to, who then, remember, they said that you could replicate that E. coli bacteria easily in the lab and then send it out to 60,000 more labs. So, you know, don't worry about the fact that this stuff has been spread wantonly all over the globe to every Joe Schmo who wants to do gene editing in their parents' basement. And that's not even funny, because these DIY gene hacker kits we've been reading about since last year, and we just read another story this past week about the dude in his parents' spare bedroom in Long Island, just outside of New York City, who's doing their DIY gene hacking. You know, make life in your own vision. I mean, they're only a few multi-celled animals, creatures, whatever they are, bacteria. But you can make them do things. And something we were reading yesterday, and I don't think I have it open here, but after the show, I was talking about some of the ways that they are using bacteria right now to produce other things. And, you know, if we go back even to last year when we found the synthetic biology report to Congress, I think it was from 2013, I'm going to say. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. But it was a few years ago it came out. But pretty much in that, they were giving Congress an update as to where things sat, all of our tax dollars going into quote-unquote synthetic biology, and pretty much the Department of Energy appeared to be the ones that were kind of running the show. And it makes a lot of sense now, the more and more we learn, just looking at, and I never remember the name of the lab, Lawrence Livermore Laboratory is very in bed with the Department of Energy. They're also in bed with DARPA and all the robotics and the space program and everything else. The DARPA lady, you know, she talked about them terraforming Mars using synthetic biology, but we're going to practice on Earth first. And now we're just letting out all the stops. So we looked at this gene, this CRISPR gene editing over the last few days, and we've looked at it for the last few months, but this ad gene in particular, sending it out all over the globe from Zimbabwe to Croatia and to China. And they also created a repository like they were the Amazon.com for biological parts, right? We read that quote. Anybody can submit a DNA sequence to their repository, or you could purchase someone else's for $65. We started reading about how they were using this new programming language too. So not only do you have CRISPR that you can splice and dice, but we now have a new programming language that allows you to take these DNA sequences that you created and point and click. You don't have to know anything about biology. Now it says nothing at all. Maybe a little bit about programming, but basically you just go in and you got to set up what you want the bacteria to create or do, push a button, and it takes the computer code and converts it into the DNA sequence that then you need to give someplace like Cambrian Genomics, your laser printing DNA people, where we discovered the new billionaire entrepreneur ended up dead somehow. We still don't know. I haven't seen anything more about him. Very interesting, though, as this stuff is all rolling out. You have 31-year-olds ending up mysteriously dead who are in this business, because I definitely think that this is way, way bigger than some starry-eyed 30-year-old kid who thinks he's going to make $1 million on laser printing DNA. Not going to happen. This technology, even though the CRISPR technology is out there right now for everybody, it's because they want to create this world of babble where everything's mixed up, because they'll be able to come in then and be the saviors. They'll be able to be the saviors. You can get your DNA reprogramming to be able to reset us back to normal after the world has messed us up and infected us. You know, the thing is that we're discovering more and more as we see all these new outbreaks. Of course, everything's blamed on climate change, but we also see bioterror as a worry. Genetically modified foods, plants, bugs, they're all out there, and there's no stops, no checks, no balances. And the stuff in our environment affects us directly, depending on how we are relating to it, whether it be in our food, whether it be in our air, in our clothing even. You know, I have some questions about wearing genetically modified cotton, BT cotton. I've been reading quite a bit about that, and that BT cotton, we don't realize that we probably are all wearing and utilizing BT cotton, also washcloths and, you know, things that are against you all the time. And if you go and look at some of the weird things that have been happening to the Indian farmers who've been in contact with that BT cotton, the weird skin allergies and skin peeling off and suicides and whatever, would make you wonder. And, you know, as we dig more and more and we look into this, like, brain gut microbiome connection and the fact that that's the holy grail, and scientists are working really hard, including DARPA, finding ways to quote unquote cure you through your gut bacteria and other things that had looked like jumbo science just a few years ago. You're going to discover that these people were in the process of conquering the code of life, right? In the process of conquering us, yet we don't know it yet. There's no guns, there's no bombs, there's no cages. So it doesn't have to be. Once they've cracked all the mysteries of CATG, and not only that, but also the mysteries of the brain, don't forget they're the same people working on the brain project. Same people working and trying to figure out how to push those dopamine buttons and insert that little DARPA implant in there, of course, to treat your PTSD or your Parkinson's disease. But tomorrow it'll be the Augment Johnny. Because you know what? The Chinese, it's all balls out. Chinese already have been working now the second time editing a human embryo. I was just reading they're messing around with trying to edit out HIV with CRISPR. Yes, HIV, which I have my questions about HIV and where that came from. I don't think it came from monkeys in the jungle of Africa. I think it came from secret government labs in the jungles of Africa. Look it up. There are labs down there. And you know that they were working on different types of biowarfare projects. And, you know, we've quite well established the biowarfare program in relation to vaccinations and things, but you'll find out that there are secret U.S. labs down in Africa that have been working on stuff like that. So I have my questions, but ends up they were going to show you how with CRISPR they could edit HIV out of the genome of people who are infected. But guess what? It didn't work, huh? Because HIV evolved and thwarted them. Now, China, I saw with a story where they were editing the second human genome. What they ended up trying to do with that genome was make it impervious to catching HIV. So, I don't know. It looks like there's a little battle going on, but it makes you wonder why they're all over HIV. You know, a lot of HIV treatment has become pretty routine now, at least utilizing exercise and nutrition, as opposed to the AZT, which we found out in that interview a couple weeks back with Dr. Nancy, I don't remember her last name, with Tim Kelly. She's an OBGYN and something else. She's a very smart lady. And she had talked about the beginnings of the treatments with HIV and AIDS and how the whole thing was a lie. And anyone who actually took those AZT drugs, which they were never even sure would work, ended up dying. And, you know, that makes you wonder, all these drugs that we now see that they're going to be able to create here, artificial molecules, and then 3D print pharmaceuticals, and, oh, by the way, GlaxoSmithKline is getting rid of all their patent protection on pharmaceuticals in third world nations. So they could just be, you know, philanthropic and give it away to everybody, because they're such nice guys. Right. Big petri dish again in countries like Africa. Continents. It's not even a country. There's how many countries on the continent of Africa? But, you know, this is just such an ugly picture here. So now we're seeing, I lost my point where I was. We were looking at the gut bacteria. Some of this new man science. Oh, and the brain. The brain. Because trying to reproduce the brain and create computers with artificial intelligence and deep learning that can learn just like us and take over everything. And remember, robots are going to take all the jobs. We are going to be just replaced. You know, as they crack the mysteries of like the gut bacteria, especially, they've already discovered a long time ago even that the gut bacteria through that vagus nerve has a direct connect to the brain. And lo and behold, bad gut bacteria can cause all kinds of mental distress, including depression, disease, illness. And by being able to replace those bacteria, they've been able to make people feel better. But what happens? What happens when DARPA's Elect RX program, and we'll start looking at that. The Elect RX was looking at using sound waves and electrical pulses and things to be able to manipulate different bodily systems that are directly connected to that vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve starts down in your gut, touches your major organ systems as it goes up through your gut and straight up to connect to your brain. It's a direct connect. And so to be able to manipulate that, they would be able to have control over a lot of bodily systems. You know, I've been listening to Clint Richardson on Shally's show on Sunday. In the last couple of weeks, this past week, and I don't remember if it was last week or the week before, He's had on Patrick Jordan talking about prion diseases and brain diseases and infections by viruses and bacteria that could not only change our behavior, but also, he was postulating, who's to say? And I was just reading something about the same exact thing the other day. Who's to say that, like, we've been waiting all this time for the invasion of the body snatchers? You know, whether they come down as pods that grow on trees or land in a spaceship and say, take me to your leader. Since the 40s, since they put that into our heads, since they brought the Nazis over in Operation Paperclip and Dr. Wernher von Braun went down to Antarctica and helped them with the Foo Fighters that the Germans had down at their secret base there and they brought over to New Mexico to then start the whole UFO scare. Yes, I think that's what they did. But what Patrick and Clint were talking about is, who's to say that there wasn't some sort of bacteria that's maybe been here for a few million years? And, you know, I mean, the Russians and over in Lake Vostok, again, in Antarctica, they'd taken some core samples and were going to revive this ancient bacteria that was millions of years old. Boy, that sounds like such a good idea. Who's to say, though, that stuff like that, like toxoplasmosis, that they found that, you know, we have the symbiotic relationship somewhat with cats and this bacteria that can infect us. They've discovered that when you are infected with the cat goggles bacteria, just like the mouse who gets infected, who is not afraid of the cat, and then the cat eats them, and they've discovered that it's the, like the cat almost has control over the human's mind. Like, you have these cat goggles, and almost the cat can almost communicate with you by you being infected. I don't think that that is the only virus that can do things like that. You know, when we started digging into the relationship between Alzheimer's and prion disease, bovine spongiform encephalopathy, aka mad cow, Krupp-Jacobs, scrapie, brain wasting disease, stuff like they're finding in sheep and in deer, it's all very similar. They're all very similar. And you have to wonder where this stuff came from. Now, we've been finding them. We found evidence that this mad cow disease, of course, has still been floating around all this time since they told us, no, don't worry about it. And, you know, now they're discovering, too, that you can't kill it. And I knew that back in the 90s. But you still can't kill it, really, maybe, if you can dump some stuff on it. But they're not really even sure if it goes away because it's not really even alive. And it's transmissible. And we discovered with Alzheimer's, Alzheimer's is a malformed protein. These aren't bacteria or viruses. They're malformed proteins. But still, you know, right now in the lab, MIT and a lot of these other mad science gone mad places that are getting sprinkled DARPA money, they're working on synthetic proteins. I just saw something the other day in regards to the stem cells. You know, we were looking at the different types of stem cells yesterday, and being able to coax them into any body part and then put them into a little mini 3D printer, right? And be able to print whatever you want. You know, or injected into your spine if you made it with the spine cells, or into your lung and repair everything. But I was reading about them creating these synthetic proteins too, to be able to play with folding them. And I'm thinking to myself, what kind of a good idea is that? Folding proteins, or we already know misfolded proteins cause mega brain wasting diseases and they cannot be killed, aka because they're not alive, and they can be transmissible, and not just through surgeries or blood transfusions, but also through dental work and things of that nature. So it's very frightening. Anyway, there was a really long setup, 22 minutes, to get back to where we left off yesterday. But we left off discussing this new program by DARPA, and I think we only made it through the first paragraph or so, where I'm going to guess, I remember when I first started to wake up here around 2006, 2007, and start looking at DARPA themselves and just some of the mad science gone mad, one of the things they had talked about was being able to fund a universal flu vaccine. And that was something that we were told, I took this emergency preparedness class that was sponsored by the feds, by FEMA. They were doing it in all the different communities. It was an 8-week course. It was actually very good. I learned a lot in that. But we had people come in from the FBI and people come in from Homeland Security and start talking to us, telling us why they're going to help keep us safe. And this, one of the things we train for here as part of our community emergency responder helpers that they dubbed us was a pandemic. And they dubbed our high school as a repository as to where all the people in the community would come and we would be helping dole out doses or do just-in-time training to give injections, which I wasn't too keen on that. I don't want to be giving anyone injections at all. I mean, not just the fact that it makes me super queasy, but I don't want to be poking people with stuff. But they were going to come up with this universal flu vaccine. So then a few years later, I start learning about the DARPA Blue Angel program. And that was when DARPA was working down at, I think it was Austin, University of Texas, Texas A&M. With one of the tobacco companies, and we did this whole thing. This is when the whole Ebola scare, again, something that came out of one lone tree in Africa with the infected fruit bat. Remember, we found that story. They found the tree. And that is a wink, one tree with an infected fruit bat in Africa. And right over there, if you look through the leaves, you'll see the secret lab. And that was the Ebola that was like mutating faster than ever before seen, right? Now that hides in joints and eyeballs and sperm for months, if not years on end, hiding and thwarting their abilities to get rid of it. Kind of sounds a lot like Lyme disease. Another questionable creation that came out somewhere near Plum Island. Yeah. But they were going to create this universal flu vaccine. And one of the things was, well, we got to get rid of the eggs because, you know, the way we do flu vaccines, we're always behind. And by the time it takes the 9 months to grow them in the embryos, chicken eggs, or I saw it recently, they were growing stuff in mouse ovaries, which is even more disturbing than chicken eggs. By the time that flu came out, the flu virus came out, it would already be potentially non-effective because it's already evolved and viruses evolve so quickly. So we need to come out with a 21st century way to create mad science gone mad vaccine. So one of the ways they decided to do it with this Blue Angel program was to start using genetically modified tobacco. We did all that when that first came out. They drowned it in the substance that then forced it to suck up. I don't know. I mean, I haven't looked at that in a long time, but look it up. Look up the Blue Angel program, Texas A&M, DARPA, and tobacco. I don't remember which one of the big tobacco companies, whether it was Philip Morris or A.G. Reynolds, might have been A.G. Reynolds, but they were working alongside out of their Kentucky facility, because there was another facility in Kentucky, to work on some of these universal flu vaccines. Now, what happened was the universal flu vaccine kind of got put aside, and Ebola running for those dollar signs and running for that problem reaction solution. Of course, we had to come up with our mad science gone mad vaccine that we could go run with troops, no less, to Africa to start immunizing with the new experimental vaccine because it was declared an emergency. So we don't have to worry about ethics. Ethics go right out the window. Kind of the same exact thing that's happening right now with the new Zika vaccines that are on their way. And of course, Zika is blown into, it is scarier than we ever thought. This virus that nobody ever even really spent time exploring because it was so mild and didn't affect anyone really, now has exploded into millions of cases and now may be causing these autoimmune responses that affect your myelin sheath, just like multiple sclerosis. And oh my God, it's so complex. Why the hell did we not know that Zika was such a killer virus all these years? But hey, don't worry about it because we're working on vaccines. We got people like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation financing that Bharat in India that already had a leg up on that vaccine because, hey, they were working on dengue and chikungunya. They were already a year ahead of everybody else, by the way. So it's getting ready by the end of the year to now go into full-blown testing. We're going to have to inoculate everyone because if you see global climate change is going to allow those Zika mosquitoes this summer to maybe make it all the way up to New York. Holy shit, it's the apocalypse. Guys, they're just using this whole process of complete, utter bastardization of biology, slice and dice in a petri dish and let it go. And then all of a sudden, oh, look, now we have a way to get everyone to get in line, roll up their sleeve, and try the next new crazy thing we created. Well, here we go. We looked at, trying to think what that program was. It was a program that George Bush implemented that we've talked about a bunch of times as well, that I had learned about in that Homeland Security class, FEMA class. Oh, I don't remember what it's called right now, but it was in the event of an emergency. We read all about it here one day on the show. They have all these stockpiles of medications that have not been tested at all on humans, but they're there just in case of an emergency. And because of this Bush program, damn, I wish I could remember it. I will by the end of the show. They could just pull out all stops. If we were in a big national emergency with some sort of pandemic, they'll be able to give you those vaccines without ever having to test them in humans. And you will be bagged and tagged and tracked to see how it all turns out. The future of 21st century medicine with that 21st Century Cures Act, if that goes through. So anyway, now let's fast forward. We went back quite a few years and kind of took a look at some of the crazy stuff that DARPA's been doing. Well, looks like to me, this new program they're working on is a it's early. Yeah, they are bringing back to life this universal vaccine idea, but it's gone beyond the original universal flu vaccine that was on the plate in 2009. They now are working, just like DARPA Dan was creating a perimeter sentry for computer systems. And, you know, now that they've brought in all the corporations to work with the government, all in the name of national security, because there's hackers under every bed and hackers in every closet. And remember, we also had Zika mosquitoes living under your bed and in your closet as well. Literally, that's what it said in the article. I couldn't believe it. But they're all living under your bed and in your closet. So now what we got to do is mix it all together. We got DARPA Dan with the intelligent antiviral, anti-intrusion, anti-hacker software that they are working on deploying. They will scan all networks, identify, search, and destroy enemies. They'll be able to identify. We looked at some of that. 60 Minutes, he did a big expose on some of their tools that they were working on. Even back, that was already a few years ago. Of course, it was all in the name of chasing human traffickers, child porn, and people hacking into Nana's bank. But they were showing how that software could get all your contacts, anyone that you've had some sort of relationship with, and put together your whole network in like seconds, show everywhere you went, and they could just push a button and have it attack you. I mean, it just was unbelievable. And in the end, this is all going to be autonomous, so this won't even require any type of human intervention. Well, they've decided to do the same thing now for the human immune system, because, you know, nature sucks. That's what we're finding. Nature sucks so bad that we need to pretend that we're gods. We're going to wield the Swiss Army knife called CRISPR to be able to slice and dice life at our own whim, create new organisms, crossing boundaries between different kingdoms of animal, insect, and human. And we are going to make it into a brave new world where things are way better. So here we go. DARPA, co-evolving antivirals aim to keep ahead of fast-changing viruses. New program, and this is right off of DARPA's website. New program aims to develop adaptive therapies able to outpace viral mutations. And the way this is worded, of course, it doesn't have any type of like catch-em headline. And if you read it kind of quickly, you'd be like, oh, co-evolving antivirals gives me a headache. I'm not going to read it. And I think that was the point. This was April 7th, 2016. So just a few days ago. Zika, Ebola, dengue, influenza, chikungunya. These are but a few among the growing cadre of viruses that today pose serious health threats to the U.S. troops as well as to civilian populations in the United States and around the world. Be afraid, be very afraid. Vaccines exist for but a few of these infectious diseases, and since these viruses have an uncanny ability to mutate and morph as they reproduce inside their hosts, those few vaccines that do exist are quickly outdated, providing little protection against the latest viral strain. See how they build it up? That's why flu vaccine manufacturers, for example, must produce new versions annually at enormous expense and with variable year-to-year efficacy. Right. So chuck the eggs. Takes 9 months. Way too long. Let's use genetically modified tobacco to pump out millions of doses within just a few weeks. That was kind of what they had working last time I had looked into that Blue Angel program and some of their work on the vaccinations. Ideally, to outpace evolving pathogens, a therapy or vaccine would have to adapt in real time, shape-shifting as fast as its targets do. Ding, ding, ding. Now, we're going to read this one more time. Ideally, to outpace evolving pathogens, a therapy or a vaccine would adapt in real time, shape-shifting as fast as its targets do. What? Yes, a vaccine or therapy would have to adapt inside of you, real time, and shape-shift to do things. Now, if that's not disturbing, let's continue to pursue that radical approach. And yes, we love how radical DARPA is. DARPA today launched its interfering and co-evolving prevention and therapy. So it's called Interfering with capital I-N-T-E-R, Interfering and Co-Evolving Prevention and Therapy Program, and the acronym for that is INTERCEPT. Oh, how cute. Says we need a paradigm to stay ahead of these moving targets, and those are the forever mutating viruses, says Jim Gimlet, DARPA program manager. And with INTERCEPT, the goal is to develop viral therapies that are effective against a broad spectrum of viral strains and can co-evolve and outpace new strains. Viruses are among the simplest infection entities known, and they all consist of two main parts. Genetic material, whether it be DNA or RNA, surrounded by a protein shell. And to reproduce, the virus attaches itself to and then enters a cell within a host organism and releases its genetic material into that cell. Well, ding, ding, because we found out that's also how they're doing some of this mad science genetic modification, that Arctic salmon or Arctic flounder or whatever it was. I talked about that yesterday, too. I saw a video where there was a scientist explaining how they actually made that Arctic cold. It was freeze tolerant tomatoes. And they took the freeze antifreeze genes out of this Arctic flounder found up near Alaska, and they cut those freeze genes, snip snip, probably with some sort of CRISPR tool, got the little DNA sequence, inserted some sort of CRISPR something into the tomato, clip clip, replaced it with these antifreeze jeans, and bang, we had this cross between a tomato and a fish, and the tomato that didn't freeze. But what they were talking about in that video is how they were using viruses. Viruses were one of the most efficient violators within the human body because they can search a cell and find little cracks and crevices and then sneak in. And once they get inside, that's what they do. They reproduce genetic material so it can spread everywhere. So how wonderful that we've discovered how to capture that invasive quality of viruses. And just like this gentleman from DARPA, Jim Gimlet, says, to reproduce. So they also are taking advantage of viruses attacking. To reproduce, the virus attaches itself to and then enters a cell within a host organism and then releases its genetic material into that cell. The viral genes then hijack the host cell's biological machinery, forcing the cell to generate new copies of the viral gene and the shell proteins. And while still inside the host cell, those freshly minted viral genomes and protein shells assemble into new viruses, which eventually burst from the cell and disperse to infect others. Now, they understand very well how this all works, and they've already found ways to harness viruses to do their evil bidding. I'm going to tell you, this is some dangerous freaking technology that they are working on. Between CRISPR and this new forever mutating immune system protector, let's read a little bit more about this. You know, and they're going to want to get this into our bodies, guys. Oh, this is going to be a vaccine that'll protect you against everything. Look, it morphs and shapeshifts. You'll forever, forever be healthy. It's all in the name of national security and climate change. Because without climate change, we wouldn't have Zika or meningitis worries in New York, which we don't. They're just telling us that. I'm not even sure if half this shit is true, to be honest. They could feed you any line. As long as it's on in mainstream news, well, then it must be true, right? Anyway, it then can disperse and burst from cells and disperse to infect other cells. So to disrupt this process, Intercept aims to harness the potential of therapeutic interfering particles. Oh, yes. Or how nicely acronymed TIPS, which are tiny virus-like entities made of laboratory-grown snippets of genetic material packaged inside protein shells. And just like viruses, TIPS can enter host cells, but they have no impact on the host because TIPS, for now, lack the genes required to independently hijack a host's genetic machinery. Yeah, but hey, just because the TIP doesn't have genetic material doesn't mean it has to be that way forever. When a TIP-containing cell does get infected by a virus, however, the cell begins producing TIP genome copies that then compete with the virus's genome copies for available protein shells. In fact, by design, the benign TIPs get produced in greater numbers than the actual viral genes. So that's scary. So it's just going to go like crazy reproducing itself so it outproduces the virus that's already doing bazillions of copies of itself. How is your immune system going to react to that? And as a result, the TIPS are preferentially packaged into new protein shells and emerge in greater numbers from the host cell. And in the end, the infected host cells produce relatively few infectious viruses and lots of dud viruses containing harmless TIP genes, which quickly dilute the real viruses and nip the infection process in the bud. Yes, and then you have all these little TIPS floating around inside your body. Don't get in line, people. That's all I can say. You know, mad science gone mad without any type of long-term testing on any of this stuff. This is all just drive at 120 miles an hour toward the brick wall and let's see what sticks. And of course, declare an emergency and you'll have lots of stupid people get in line. You can think of these tip-filled envelopes as tiny Trojan horses. Yes, it's a good way to put it. But instead of containing warriors, this time, they contain pretenders that ultimately outnumber real disease-causing viruses and interfere with their ability to replicate, says Grimlet. And because tips are made of genetic material, he added, they will be subject to mutation and diversification over time, just as the genomes of real viruses are. So once we develop a tip that works for a given virus, we expect it to generate a steady stream of variants. So there will always be a population of tips within your body with the right genetic stuff to disrupt any future new strains of that virus that may arise. So they have literally created or are creating a synthetic immune system with search and destroy. It doesn't really destroy, but it just overwhelms. This is beyond scary. You know, just because this time they didn't put any poison payload in there or any little DNA nanobots that they developed at MIT that have some sort of drug payload when activated doesn't mean that they can't. Because they most certainly can. I think we have established over all the research we've done on the show and how this mad science works and all these little weird things they're doing, they could do anything. And this is a package. This is, I mean, there is the only thing that is stopping this from being a killer is putting in killer code inside of the tip. Right now, what did he say? Let's find it. Once we develop a tip that works for a given virus, we can expect it to generate a steady stream of variants. Oh, yeah, but it's benign. And don't worry, because it's tiny Trojan horses, but they contain warriors who are slinging duds. In a preliminary DARPA-funded study conducted in cell growing in petri dishes, engineered tips reduced viral loads nearly 20%. And the Intercept program aims to achieve even higher antiviral efficiencies, test tip safety and efficacy in animal models, as well as assess whether via spontaneous mutations, and put it in brackets inside of you, tips can indeed keep up with whatever new tricks actual viruses come up with as they evolve. This program will focus on three technical goals. The first is to develop tip candidates that can remain dormant in uninfected cells. Remain dormant. So you're going to get born and then have to get your tip shot. And it'll just remain dormant in your body, in all your cells. But it can replicate. And God forbid you ever get a virus. It can outcompete that virus after infection, and to assess the short-term efficacy and toxicity in cultured cells, I'll be doing some more testing. The second goal is to conduct long-term, yes, long-term, 4 to 8 month long-term, yes, long-term studies of safety and efficacy to assess the capability of tips to co-evolve with a virus. And the third goal is to develop computer models that can help inform the design of improved tip by predicting the safety, efficacy, and co-evolution dynamics at various scales from an individual cell to an organism to an entire population. So we can see what happens when we let it out in the wild. And don't worry about it, because we already got all kinds of software out there that allow you to slice and dice and program without having to know anything about biology at all. Create DNA strands, run simulations. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing how we have crafted the demise of all of biology in the 21st century. I'm just so impressed. Anyway, so to familiarize potential participants with the technical objectives of Intercept, DARPA is hosting a Proposers Day on Thursday, April 28, 2016 in Arlington, Virginia. So if anyone's nearby and wants to go, it might be kind of fun. A DARPA special notice announcing the Proposers Day and describing the specific capability sought is available at gousa.gov/CTW, all small, capital XQ. So it is called the Intercept Program. I would be very afraid of that. DARPA is treading in places that they should never be treading. And they absolutely are doing things that, you know, we don't want to get loose out there. I wanted to take a look, and I don't know if we're going to have time. I can't believe how fast time is going here. Let's take a look at one other program I talked about that DARPA had been working on. And that was the A2P. Atoms to product. This actually looks like it was announced in December. I've mentioned it quite a few times. I don't think we ever looked at this. But if we couple this with our intercept program, it's quite interesting. It's all over the web. All you got to search is DARPA space A2 with the number 2P. This is in one of the military publications, assembling atom-sized pieces for micro-machines, the goal of DARPA's A2P program. Arlington, Virginia, DARPA officials are looking to develop technologies and processes to build nanoscale pieces whose dimensions are near the size of atoms into systems, components, or materials that are at least millimeter scale in size. The big hurdle to this goal is that many common materials, when fabricated at a nanometer scale, exhibit unique and attractive atomic scale behaviors, but lose them when they are built at a product scale dimension, such as a few centimeters. So, DARPA has launched the Atoms to Product Program, A2P, and choose 10 groups to go and solve this challenge. The beneficial atomic scale behaviors, including quantized current voltage behavior, dramatically lowers melting points and specifically targets higher heats. The 10 companies seeking these benefits for DARPA include Zyvex Labs in Richardson, Texas, SRI in Menlo Park, California, Boston University in Boston, Massachusetts. I mean, look at those are three great lizard's dens already. University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana, HRL Laboratories in Malibu, California, Park in Palo Alto, Embody in Norfolk, Virginia, Voxtel in Beaverton, Oregon, Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Draper Laboratory in Cambridge. The ability, now remember, Massachusetts and MIT is where Eric Drexler got his education. He is the father of nanotechnology. And he had talked about being able to do these desktop manufacturing plants, for lack of a better term. And they'll be using nanobots to produce products. We are talking like the beginnings of Replicator. We're already seeing that with being able to create artificial molecules with a 3D printer. We just plug in the raw materials and bang, look, we can create one of those rare substances that in the past, you know, so 20th century, you had to go to a Peruvian rainforest, go dig up a rare plant after you found it, and then synthesize a chemical from the roots of that rare plant. Well, now you just push a couple buttons and you can produce it on demand. Well, we want to do the same thing for products. We're already doing the same thing for cells. Being able to mutate, crisscross, applesauce, slice and dice, and make it whatever we want. Like, this is the world. If there ever was a Tower of Babel, this is taking language and the inability to translate, speak, or communicate. And now we're doing it with biology. Except we're mixing and matching. We're putting all into a big blender and then throwing in, like, some, I don't know, silicone paste, whatever, into that blender, mixing it up and saying, go nuts, start all over. Let's start some new life. This is just beyond insane. And they're already building biological machines. They're doing it with DNA, little nanobot DNA machines that they can program. And we were reading about the programming language that they are using. I don't remember what that was called. But there was a little application. They go right in, program up these cells and set them loose. Have them create, go from zeros and ones to ATCG, and bing, there you go. There's your DNA sequence. And then you can have it laser printed, integrated into other things. Anyway, back to this A2P program. The ability to assemble atomic scale pieces into practical components and products is the key to unlocking the full potential of micro machines, says John Main, DARPA program manager. The DARPA Atoms to Product program aims to bring the benefits of microelectronic style miniaturization to systems and products that combine mechanical, electrical, and chemical processes. And don't forget the biological. Okay, one of the big pushes for all of this technology is to be able to non-invasively infect the human body to, of course, cure disease or cure injury. Right now, we have these little microchip brain implants for PTSD soldiers and Parkinson's patients. And of course, we had National Geographic do the very first brain surgery ever live on TV, just so you could see how great it is. Normalization. We should all be getting our brain implants. And look, Johnny, it'll fix you, bionic man. But in the future, the plan is to make these so small that we won't even have to get implants. We might be able to just aerosolize them and inhale them. You know, Zori messaged me the other day asking, hi, Zori, if you're out there, asking me for some information on smart dust. This is really where I kind of started talking about all this stuff back when I first found internet radio 2011, talking about smart dust and whether or not it could be aerosolized. And I've been reading about that for quite a number of years already by that point. So I started digging, trying to find her some good stuff this weekend. And I was surprised to find that even back in the 90s, they were messing with it. And back in the early 2000s, they were ready. DARPA was ready already to start testing with smart dust. That was 2003. We are now in 2016. I haven't heard a word in years about smart dust. Where is it? They were going to put little wireless receivers that were so small. They were, I don't think they were nano-sized, but they were miniaturized to the point of they could be aerosolized easily. And they were going to put trillions. That was HP's plan. Put trillions of them like a nervous system on the planet so they could do environmental monitoring and real-time everything. What happened to that? 2003, let's say if it was 2010. It's 2016. We haven't seen a word about it. I think they let it loose, guys. How could you spend all these years on time and effort and research? And I mean, there's all these companies that were working on it back then. And then everything goes radio silence. It's usually an indication that something happened. Anyway, this A2P program calls for closing the assembly gap in two steps, from atoms to microns, and then from microns to millimeters. Performers are required to address one or both of these steps and have been assigned one of three working groups with a distinct focus area. Of course, they're doing, optical metamaterial assembly. Nanoscale devices have demonstrated nearly unlimited power and functionality. But there hasn't been a general purpose, high volume, low cost method for building them. So God forbid, nanoscale devices can do anything, unlimited power, unlimited functionality, but we can't make them cheap and fast yet. So let's work on that. So Boston University, University of Notre Dame are both working on that. They are developing an atomic calligraphy technique that can spray paint atoms with nanometer precision to build tunable optical metamaterials for the photonic battlefield. Now remember, photonics having to do with fiber optics and flashes of light and things of that nature. They've been messing with a lot as part of the BRAIN project and being able to put little super thin fiber optic wires. I don't remember what those wires were called. Nanowires, I think they were calling them. Into the brain of a developing moth. That was the story that we read about. Into the pupae. So when the moth developed, it had these nanowires embedded right into its brain that then they could use literally a remote control to remotely control this large moth. And it, do a search. The video's out there. I'll see if I can find it for the notes of the show. But it was probably one of the most disturbing videos I've ever seen. This living creature, you could see, was fighting. He didn't want to do what the remote control was forcing it to do. How long is it going to be before, you know, of course they're going to do in the name of super soldiers or whatever, some sort of transhumanist creation clone thing that they make. But how long is it going to be before something like that is, you know, becomes a medical procedure? It's going to fix something. We'll be able to have direct connect to different areas in the brain. And then it might even become mandatory. Who knows? Or they might just discover what buttons to push by utilizing these nanowires to then eventually, you know, make it wireless. I don't know. This mad science has gotten to the point where it is so difficult to follow. And all of these disruptive technologies, we've talked about that before. It's not just one. It's thousands of disruptive technologies all coming at us at the same time. All slicing and dicing biology and mixing it with the synthetic. And then all the lunatics that have no boundaries as far as ethics or morals or thoughts to the future as to how this is going to pollute the gene pool, or, you know, all the interns sending out CRISPR gene editing kits taped to a postcard to 60,000 people all over the globe. Nobody's thinking about the long-term consequences. All right, guys. Well, if you can even believe it, we are down to the last 15 seconds of the show, and I got nowhere near where I wanted to get today. So I guess make sure you stick around, and we will pick up here tomorrow. Today is Wednesday, so Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next. And then we have Josh live at 6 p.m. Eastern. Continue Condition, the boys from New York at 8. Liam Sheff at 9, brand new. And at 11, AntiBD Radio with Nick and DB. Everyone have an awesome Wednesday. I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.